Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 11th of February, the day before Abraham Lincoln's birthday, and we're going to do comedy. It's been a long time since we've done comedy, and so this hour we present our, well, it used to be seasonal, so let's try to stick to that again, seasonal comedy program, and we're going to be hearing this hour from George Carlin and Lily Tomlin, Frank Caliendo, Bob and Ray, my personal favorites, Capital Steps, Paula Poundstone, Wanda Sykes, Bill Cosby, Gilda Radner, and other performers. And welcome to your phone calls. If you hear a piece and you happen to love it or you know other pieces by the performer we're playing, the comedian we're playing today, then call in with your thoughts about that. We want to weave you into the conversation. Or if you have suggestions for future programs, please call Rob. I don't know if you know we're doing that, Rob. Please call Rob and say that you'd like to hear this or that, and he'll write those down, and we'll do another program in spring because we just made it to the winter comedy show. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join our comedy conversation. And let me just get myself good and organized here. There we go. We're going to start with George Carlin. George Carlin, the late great comedian who passed away at the age of 71 just last year on June 22nd. He won the Mark Twain Prize, and that announcement was made a week before he died. He was delighted with the honor and was looking forward to attending the ceremony. George Carlin started out as a conventional comedian and was quite successful in nightclubs and on television. In the 1960s, he changed his style of comedy and began doing Lenny Bruce-style social and political commentary. His Seven Dirty Words comedy routine, which was done at Summerfest here in Milwaukee, was part of a radio censorship case, you'll remember, that went to the U.S. Supreme Court. This skit, which I think is wonderful, proves that comedy doesn't need a lot of those words, my son said this morning on the way to work as we were playing this clip, which he loves. He was amazed that we found a George Carlin piece that didn't have swear words in it, but it doesn't. And in honor of the upcoming season, not too long away now, this is a wonderful commentary from George Carlin on baseball and football.
I'd like to talk a little bit about baseball and football. Starting with baseball, baseball is different from any other sport in a lot of different little ways. For instance, in most sports, you score points or you score goals. In baseball, you score runs. In most sports, the ball or the object is put in play by the offensive team. In baseball, the defense puts the ball in play, and only the defensive team is allowed to touch the ball. In fact, in baseball, if an offensive player touches the ball intentionally, he's out. Also, most sports, the team is run by a coach. In baseball, the team is run by a manager. And only in baseball does the manager or the coach have to wear the same uniform the players do. Can you picture Bill Parcells in his New York Giants uniform? Now, baseball and football are different from one another in other kind of interesting ways, I think. First of all, baseball is a 19th century pastoral game. Football is a 20th century technological struggle. Baseball is played on a diamond in a park, the baseball park. Football is played on a gridiron in a stadium, sometimes called Soldier Field or War Memorial Stadium. Baseball begins in the spring, the season of new life. Football begins in the fall when everything is dying. In football, you wear a helmet.
In baseball, you wear a cap.
Football is concerned with downs. What down is it?
Baseball is concerned with ups. Who's up? Are you up? I'm not up. He's up.
In football, the specialist comes in to kick. In baseball, the specialist comes in to relieve someone.
In football, you receive a penalty.
In baseball, you make an error. Whoops!
Football has hitting, clipping, spearing, blocking, piling on, late hitting, unnecessary roughness, and personal fouls.
Baseball has the sacrifice.
Football is played in any kind of weather. Rain, sleet, snow, hail, mud. Can't read the numbers on the field. Can't read the yard markers. Can't read the players' numbers. The struggle will continue.
In baseball, if it rains, we don't come out to play. I can't come out to play. It's raining out. Baseball has a seventh inning stretch.
Football has the two-minute warning.
Baseball has no time limit. We don't know when it's going to end. We might have extra innings.
Football is rigidly timed, and it will end even if we have to go to sudden death.
In baseball, during the game in the stands, there's kind of a picnic feeling. Emotions may run high or low, but there's not that much unpleasantness.
In football, in the stands during the game, you can be sure that at least 27 times you were perfectly capable of taking the life of a fellow human being. Preferably a stranger.
And finally, the objectives of the two games are totally different. In football, the object is for the quarterback, otherwise known as the field general, to be on target with his aerial assault, riddling the defense by hitting his receivers with deadly accuracy, in spite of the blitz, even if he has to use the shotgun. With short bullet passes and long bombs, he marches his troops into enemy territory, balancing this aerial assault with a sustained ground attack which punches holes in the forward wall of the enemy's defensive line. In baseball, the object is to go home and to be safe. I hope I'll be safe at home. Safe at home.
And here's just spring training, which starts next week. George Carlin. We hope to be able to play another George Carlin piece a little bit later in the program. He's marvelous. We're doing our comedy hour this hour and welcoming your phone calls, too. If there is a comedian we're playing and you have special memories, fond memories of a certain piece or heard the performer somewhere, feel free to call in with your reminiscences. 800-486-8655. And Rob Schroeder is also taking phone calls for future comedy shows. If there's something we don't get to today, please give him a call at the same phone number and we hope to include it on a future show. In the theme of baseball and football and those who commentate, are commentators on those sports, Frank Caliendo is a Wisconsin fellow, you know. He attended Waukesha South High School. He has become a very well-known comedian, began his own show on TBS and does wonderful impressions. He said about celebrities who may not like his impressions of them, "I don't do these things to be mean. I do them to make money." This is Frank Caliendo and doing some of his wonderful impressions on the David Letterman show.
Well, I'm looking forward to the Super Bowl, not for the commercials, but because I get to hear John Madden again.
Yeah.
I love John Madden because he makes me feel smart. He tells you the same thing at the beginning of the sentence that he says in the end of the sentence. I have no idea what he's doing in the middle. Then he wraps it up with the words, "and that's what that's all about." It's like a Band-Aid on a John Madden tragedy. He'll say things like, "great football is about great football. And you have great football players playing great football. That's the best kind of football to play. But you have regular players playing great football. That's just regular great football, not great, great football. And that's what that's all about." This one player, Brett Favre, he talks about him all the time. It's like somebody made a bet with him that he couldn't work him into everything, and Madden just wanted to prove him wrong, right? He's talking about hybrid grass one time. He's like, "half of that grass on the field is real, and half of it is fake."
But Brett Favre is all real. You owe me $50. Brett Favre, I mean, Brett Favre is the greatest player in the world. You could cut off both his arms and both his legs, he would still be the best torso in football.
Do you ever hear Madden eat a sentence halfway through? Like,
hey, that predicate tastes better than the subject right there. Put a little prepositional phrase on there, boom. You got a tough sentence.
Actors are always fun to watch. Like Al Pacino, he could take a little kid saying and turn it into a tough guy phrase. Somebody come and say, the mob's going to kick your butt, be like, you, sir, are a liar.
Liar, liar, your pants are on fire! Na-na, natty boo-boo.
But the guy that really cracks me up is President Bush. I think it's great we have a president who seems like he's always looking directly into the sun.
Somebody do me a favor and hand me a pair of sunglasses. Somebody get me a visor. Sir, you mean advisor, no advisor. What are you, stupid?
And he's the only person I've ever seen do this when he talks. I've seen turkeys do that. I'm always, when I watch him, I'm always waiting for him to go, gobble, gobble. What I truly love is when he gets something right. Because when our president gets something right, he is the happiest man on earth. He gets that little smile on his face, that I can't believe that came out correctly smile. It's like a fan is blowing on him 200 or 300 miles an hour. He's not getting rid of world hunger. He's just getting all the way through the sentence and he's content, right?
Be like, and that's why the United States will lead us all to peace.
This move was, then I realized he's kind of like a slot machine. Because every time he opens his mouth, he knows he's gambling just a little bit. He could never have gotten himself out of the stuff Clinton got himself into. There's no way. Clinton was so smooth. He could lie his way out of anything. He could stand in front of you right now, look you all directly in the eyes and say, I am not here.
What is here? Isn't here just there without a T?
If the Monica Lewinsky scandal happened to President Bush, there's no way he gets out of it. Put him on the stand. Mr. President, do you have relations with that woman, Monica Lewinsky?
What did they tell me to say here? That was out loud, wasn't it? I cannot believe I said that. There's two kinds of words, inside words and outside words. Inside words stay in, outside words come out. That time an inside word popped out. Gobble, gobble.
Frank Caliendo, who's from Waukesha, he's so good, isn't he? It's wonderful to hear him just on radio because he's got those voices down. And, you know, we played this too on the day that Brett Favre, as Rob tells me, retired again today. It will be material for comedians, I'm sure. This is our comedy show for winter of 2009. We're welcoming phone calls, too, if we're playing something and it reminds you of another piece by another comedian or you remember another piece from one of the comedians we've played. We'd love to hear from you. Also, make suggestions for the spring show coming up sometime in the spring. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 is our number. And we'll have Lily Tomlin, who is so sweet, with us in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our comedy show for this winter is what you're listening to right now, and feel free to take to call us. Our phone calls are coming in. We'll listen to a Lily Tomlin piece and take some of your calls if we can. I think that she's a wonderfully inventive and very, very funny woman, and there is a sweetness about her. Mark Twain made reference to humor and sweetness, and it's exemplified in a lot of Lily Tomlin's work. She's, of course, one of America's foremost comedians, and she does television, theater, motion pictures, animation, and video. She has received all kinds of awards, 6 Emmys, a Tony for her one-woman Broadway show appearing nightly, a second Tony as Best Actress, Drama Desk Award, and Outer Critics Award for her one-woman performance in Jane Wagner's The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe. She was born in Detroit, Michigan, and grew up in a working-class neighborhood on the outskirts of one of the city's most affluent areas. She says she wasn't funny as a child, but she admits that she knew who was and lifted all their material right off the television screen. Her favorites included Lucille Ball, Imogene Coca, Jean Carroll, one of the first female stand-ups on the Ed Sullivan Show. She went to Wayne State University to study medicine, but her elective courses in theater arts compelled her to leave college to become a performer in local coffee houses, and thus it all began. This is a piece I'm sure many of you will remember. It's so funny. It's Ernestine, the telephone operator, who's calling Joan Crawford, vice president of Pepsi, and Ernestine is requesting a dime refund because the machine gobbled it up. Doesn't that make you mad?
Venetia, this is urgent. And damn Sarah Coventry. Venetia, I want you to do me a favor and cut in on the executive offices at Pepsi-Cola. Oh, she is, eh? Well, put me through anyway. She can call Paris back later. And a gracious good afternoon to you. Is this Miss J as in Joan, Joan Crawford? No, this is not Paris. Well, I don't know, but if I'm not mistaken, it's still in France, Europe. Miss Crawford, this is Miss Tomlin from the telephone company. With an annoying problem that only you, as vice president of the Pepsi-Cola company, can help. Hello? Put me through again, Venetia. Hello, this is Paris, France, calling Miss Joan Crawford. Is she there? Merci. Miss Crawford, this is Miss Tomlin. Don't you hang up. You've angered me. And when you anger me, you anger the phone company and all the power necessary to tie up your lines for the next 50 years. Do I make myself clear? Good. Now, Miss Crawford, I believe it was my turn. Today, I was robbed of my dime in a Pepsi-Cola machine. I want it back. The entire 10 cents. Just a minute. That's not sniggering I hear, is it? Maybe 10 cents is not much to you, but at the telephone company, dimes are our bread and butter. Well, I never give that out. You can just send it to Miss Ernestine Tomlin, care of the phone company, USA. When may I expect my dime? Well, I prefer the cash, but a check will do nicely. Oh, no, I will not accept a stamp. That is a definite no to a stamp. I will not accept 5 empties either. Miss Crawford, do you remember this? Pepsi-Cola hits the spot, 12 full ounces, that's a lot. I'll bet you think Pepsi hits the spot, don't you? Well, if you don't fork over my 10 cents, Ma Bell's gonna hit you where you live. And this is no idle threat. Miss Crawford, according to our files, your offices have 5,000 of our telephones. Now, unless I am reimbursed pronto, we are going to pull your plugs a 6-pack at a time. Well, that's more like it. Now then, when may I expect my dime? By messenger. How very kind. Oh, and Miss Crawford, would you tell him to hurry? I'm just dying for a Coke.
That last line. Lily Tomlin in we have played her before on comedy shows. She's so inventive. Ernestine, the telephone operator, calling Joan Crawford, who's vice president of Pepsi, saying, where the heck is the dime that got in the machine? I want my money back. We're doing comedy this hour. We were so fortunate to spend, I'll never forget this hour, an hour with Bob Elliott from Bob and Ray during a recent comedy show. And Bob even wrote a thank you note to Rhonda that he typed. He's never learned how to use a computer, much less an electric typewriter. And he sent her this beautiful thank you note on a typewriter he's had since 1930-something. And she saved it. It's good. Bob and Ray gave us comedies from 1946 on, and their comedy lives on, really. Their style lives on through, they're still played, but also through comedians who are all influenced by their creative performances. David Letterman, Jay Leno, Garrison Keillor. Kurt Vonnegut was a huge fan of the pair and said that their jokes turn out to be universal because much of life presents itself as the same dilemma, how to seem lusty and purposeful when less than nothing is going on. Bob and Ray had a 40-year career starting in Boston. Bob, a disc jockey, and Ray, a newscaster. And when the Red Sox had rain delays in the baseball games, the two would banter back and forth to fill the time, which grew into a show of their own, Matinee with Bob and Ray. And in 1951, they went to NBC for a daily 15-minute TV program. They did other radio shows, and they finished their radio career on public radio with the Bob and Ray Public Radio Show. A writer in The New Yorker describes their comedy. Bob and Ray's humor turns on their faultless timing and on their infinite sense of the ridiculous. It's also framed by that special, sly, dry, wasteless vision of life perfected during the last couple of centuries by middle-class New Englanders. This is from a CD, Bob and Ray, The Lost Episodes. And I just think they're so funny. It's just a funny little piece. The Flower Arranging Convention with Mrs. Bertha Upland Lachlan.
Ray, there's a Flower Arrangers Convention here in New York, and I've asked Mrs. Bertha Upland Lachlan of New Hope, Pennsylvania, to come by today and tell us a little bit about what's new in flower arranging. Mrs. Lachlan, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Bob and Ray Show.
Thank you very much. Fire away with the questions, and I'll try to answer as best I can.
First of all, Mrs. Bertha Upton Lachlan, how many
Well,
members...
now, you don't have to go through that all the time. So, it's all right to call me Miss Bertha or Mrs. Lachlan. But going through
well,
Bertha
Well, is it Ms. or Ms.,
Lachlan,
actually?
It's
Ms. Well, Ms. Lachlan, how many members of your group are here in convention in New York right now?
14.
And I understand that you've taken over part of the Coliseum for your exhibit, is
That's
that right?
That's right. My different flower arranging exhibits are up there.
Do you have a particular favorite that you're arranging over there?
Yes, I am arranging a very lovely combination of roses, gladioli, and skunk cabbage.
That's rather an unusual combination, but one that I should imagine would be very effective. What sort of... an occasion would you use an arrangement like that on?
Well, a wedding reception, burning of the mortgage, or any such occasion where you want flowers.
Well, now, can you tell us briefly what some of the other arrangements are over there?
Yes, there's a lovely lilacs. Of course, they're quickly going out of season.
Yes, but they are right at their beautiful height at the moment.
Yes. But they're quickly fading, as I said.
That's right, Mrs. Bertha Upland Lachlan.
What
else?
Now, you don't have to keep calling me Ms. Bertha Upland Lachlan. Either call me Ms. Bertha, or Ms. Lachlan, or Bertha, or ma'am.
All
right. But please don't run through all those names.
Okay, lady.
It makes me very, very nervous when you do that.
Is Mr. Lachlan here with you in town?
No, indeed not. He has nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll try to get over to see
her. Here's a free pass. Hope you'll drop up to see the flowers.
Thank you
very much, Mrs. Bertha Upland Lachlan.
Will you please
Upland Lachlan,
don't... Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. It is so funny. I think it's so funny. So we'll play a little bit more. Bob and Ray from The Lost Episodes. This is Bob and Ray at the Overstocked Warehouse. 1938 calendars on sale.
Bargain bombshell from the Bob and Ray Overstocked Surplus Warehouse today.
We have it right now to present to you, too, don't we?
Yeah.
That's right, neighbors.
The mammoth clearance is underway, and if you act quickly, our loss is your gain.
Let's not deal in generalities, though, Ray. The folks want to know the cold, hard facts. Let's get to those.
And the cold, hard fact is that one of our buyers, a man we trusted, apparently was out to get us.
He's left our organization now, but before doing so, he contracted for 5 carloads of 1938 calendars.
And we're selling out these beautiful calendars at the giant overstock surplus warehouse at a figure so low that you just cannot afford to pass it by.
Now, these 1938 calendars are really objects of art, ladies and gentlemen. You'll be proud to display them prominently in your home. Many have breathtaking scenes from our national parks.
Some show the grounds of the 1936 Texas Centennial in all of its splendor.
And still others portray the members of the 1937 Toledo Mud Hens baseball team in glorious sepia tones.
Now, the amazing thing is, these lovely 1938 calendars are as useful as they are ornamental.
Yes, merely by rearranging the pages a little bit, you can make an almost complete, almost accurate 1956 calendar.
Well, did you know, for example, that May of 1938 and January of 1956 are dead ringers for each other? All the dates fall on exactly the same days of the week in both months.
A pair of scissors and a little paste. That's all you need to modernize these 1938 calendars at a fraction of the cost of buying a new 1956 calendar.
Or maybe you want to leave your 1938 calendar in all of its quaint original charm. Let it hang on your wall as a real reference guide to various dates just 18 years ago.
Perhaps you went to grandmother's for Thanksgiving in 1938. What date did it come on? You can tell in a jiffy with one of these lovely surplus calendars hanging on your wall.
February 12, 1938 was Abraham Lincoln's 129th birthday. On what day of the week did it fall? Do you wish you knew?
Well, you can find out and pick up thousands more valuable bits of information as well by rushing your order in today.
Just address Bob and Ray, 18 years behind the times, New York.
But the thing is, they're never behind the times. Their comedy is still so wonderful, and it was done so many years ago. It's good. This is comedy you're listening to on the Ideas Network. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We're welcoming phone calls, too, if you have a funny reminiscence. Maybe you were hearing these people in concert somewhere that we're playing, or you may have a suggestion for our next comedy show, which we promise will be in the spring of 2009. Please call Rob, or you can send Rhonda an email, right? Flutter email with jokes and suggestions. Rob's number of the same, 800-486-8655. And Rhonda's email is, you can send it to me too. Our emails are fanning@wpr.org and mine is dunk@wpr.org. Dunk@wpr.org. Here's a group you hear fairly often on public radio, the Capitol Steps. They began as a group of Senate staffers who set out to make fun of the people in places that gave them their jobs. And many of the staffers ignored the conventional wisdom, don't quit your day job. And all of the current members aren't Capitol Hill staffers, but taken together, the performers have worked in a total of 18 congressional offices and represented 62 years of collective House and Senate staff experience. They've recorded something like 30 albums and have been featured on NBC, CBS, ABC, PBS, and we're going to play them for you right now. This is to the tune of Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA and the song here from the Capitol Steps, God Bless My SUV.
Well, I heard that other countries are down on the U.S., a land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai. I refuse to live that way. And I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103. I'll gladly park so close to you, when you pull out, you can't see. I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV.
Hey,
digest you. But hey, I'll get there alive. So don't y'all pester me with questions like, oh, what would Gandhi drive? You won't catch me at Starbucks if I need a drink or a snack. When I bought this ship, she came equipped with a Starbucks in the back. And I'm proud to be an American with a car that fits my rear. The cash I put down would have fed a town in Somalia for a year. You wanna send me a birthday card? Well, check that address with me. It's when I'm on the road, got my own zip code. Just for
the Capitol Steps and God Bless My SUV. Paula Poundstone was born and grew up in Sudbury, Massachusetts. By the time she was 19 years old, she was on a bus, Greyhound bus, long trip on the Greyhound bus across the country, stopping at open mic nights at comedy clubs. She credits her kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Bump, with being the first one to spot her comedy talents. Bump wrote in a letter to Paula's parents, I have enjoyed many of Paula's humorous comments about our activities. This is Paula, and it's a very short bit, but a really funny bit about the views from the airplane.
I just flew in. I flew in during that rainstorm a couple nights ago, and you know, you can't fly anymore without the pilot doing the thing where they tell the stuff out the window. Have you noticed that? I don't want to know the stuff out the window. Nothing out the window is exciting to me. All I want to do is sleep. And I don't think anyways I ever seen anything they pointed out ever. They could tell me there's like clouds and ocean out there. I'd be like, well, hell, I don't see it. And if the thing is on the left, then I'm on the right. And if I'm on the right, then the thing is on the left. Something like that. And if it's only on one side of the plane, then why tell everybody? Tell the people on the left, for heaven's sake. Just like, people on the left. Psst, this is the pilot. Don't tell the people on the right. There is the coolest stuff out your window right now. Don't all look at once. We hate the people on the right. You are the best people on this plane right now. Look at them over there, just sitting there. God, I hate them. They are ruining everything. We are purposely flying crooked right now so that they can't see stuff. You don't have to put your tray tables up if you don't want to.
Paula Poundstone, Comedy Hour for the winter of 2009, this hour. Reminder that you can call and make comments on comedians we're playing or suggest future programs as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. George Gobel, or as he called himself, Lonesome George, a nickname that he had pretty much for his life, was a Chicago guy who graduated from Chicago's Theodore Roosevelt High School in 1937. He was a country singer, and after he served, he really did. This bit you're about to hear makes reference to his service in World War II. He turned to comedy. In 54, he began a series on NBC, and the centerpiece was a monologue about situations and experiences that had happened to him, as well as stories allegedly about his real-life wife, Alice. He was a big-time comedy star of the 1950s, and this is a brief and funny appearance on The Johnny Carson Show.
Johnny, I want to say something. I'm very glad to be here, and I'm going to tell you, without me, your show tonight would have been nothing. This is a pretty fast league.
Here, oh, this is the A troops are out here.
And
tonight.
I'm glad you saved me. Now, you know, because, you know, when you come on last, you're, Did you ever get the feeling... Did you ever get the feeling that the world was a tuxedo and you were a pair of brown shoes? And I have a feeling it's going to get worse before it gets better.
I asked you about this before, and I think they thought you were making a joke. The fighter pilots. You were a pilot, right?
Oh, yes. I was a pilot during the war. You remember the war. It was in all the papers. And
I reckon.
Well, I told you about that the last time I was on your show, you know, but I fought the whole war in Oklahoma.
What were you saying?
I don't know why people laugh when I say that, you know. Because that's evidently where they needed me, or they wouldn't have sent me. No, go ahead, laugh. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. But if you remember, you think back. No, first of all, I was an instructor. I was in B-28s first at Altus, Oklahoma, and then B-26s at Frederick, Oklahoma, and I was an instructor there. And if you think back, and I'm not mad at anybody or anything, but just remember, there was not one Japanese aircraft got past Tulsa.
Well. George Global on the Johnny Carson Show. Funny bit. Gilda Radner, one of the great comic geniuses of the last century, ranking up there with Lucille Ball and other comedy legends. She had a life that was way too short. She was born in 46 and died, as you know, of ovarian cancer in 1989. We're going to play a wonderful piece that she did, and it's advice to college graduates at the Columbia School of Journalism. It's quite funny.
Thanks a lot. Thanks. First of all, thanks. Thanks a lot. First of all, I gotta say, it's an extreme pleasure, a joy, a thrill, an up, and a real snappy surprise for me, Rosanna Dana, to give the commencement speech to the graduating class of the Columbia School of Journalism. At first, when they called me this morning, 6:30, thanks a lot, I was real excited because I figured there's no greater honor than for an alumnus to give the graduating speech at his alma mater. But I suppose that I, Rosanna Dana, will have to wait for that honor because I found out that your school is not affiliated with the Columbia School of Broadcasting. But you guys was like in big trouble because Geraldo Rivera was sick as a dog. So I figured, why not come down here and speak to the young journalists of tomorrow? Geraldo had a boil that had to be lanced. It was one of those round ones that's hard like a rock, you know, and it was on his neck right here like a lump. And even if he went to the doctor and they drained it, you know how messy those things are, would have got all over his shirt and everything, would have made you sick during your graduation. So, it's just as good he's not here. Anyways, as I look out at your sweet, young, tender little journalistic faces with those stupid flat black hats on with the tassels hanging off of them, I can't help but know exactly what you're thinking. You're probably saying to yourself, hey, I'm a college graduate. I spent a lot of time in school. What does journalism have to offer me? What do I have to offer journalism? What is there to write about? What is there to write with? Should I use a pencil or a typewriter? What kind of pencil? A number two pencil or one that writes darker? Where do I get these pencils? Do I bring them in or does my boss give them to me? If I don't bring them in, will I get fired? If I get fired, I'll starve and then I'll die. What should I do? For college graduates, you sure ask a lot of dumb questions. But I know exactly what you're going through because I remember when I, Rosanna Dana, first entered the field, I was real nervous. Imagine, if you will, a sweet, young, idealistic little Rosanna, fresh out of Columbia School of Broadcasting, looking for a job in journalism. I filled out applications, I went to interviews, and they all told me the same thing. You're overqualified, you're underqualified, don't call us, we'll call you. It's a jungle out there. A woman's place is in the home, drop dead, have a nice day, goodbye. But I didn't give up. I mean, even after I had this interview with the head of personnel at CBS, the Tiffany Network, and this guy says to me, Ms. Rosanna Dana, why don't you go look for a job in the wonderful world of fast foods? Well, I was kind of PO'd at that. I'm walking down the hall when who do I see sitting in his office eating his lunch but Mr. CBS Evening News himself, Walter Cronkite. And just between you and me, Rosanna Danny, you know what that hotshot news guy eats for lunch? Luncheon meat on white bread with butter with one piece of lettuce that got wilted from being between the meat and the butter so long? I mean, that fancy-smancy news guy is eating that pink bologna meat with white dots in it that you don't know what it is. And what are those dots? Is that cheese in there? I thought it was a Q-tip got in there. Or maybe it was Rivera's boil got in there somewhere. Anyways, I really poured on the Rosanna Dana charm. I made him a cup of coffee. I showed him my resume. I told him a lot of journalism jokes. Finally, Cronkite says to me, Roseanne, you should have a job here at CBS. Well, everything has gone great. Then, all of a sudden, this wooden chair that I'm sitting on makes a noise on the floor. Well, I thought I was... Cronkite says, hey, did that come out of you? I go, no way, Mr. Cronkite, I swear that didn't come out of me. So then I tried to move the chair again to get it to make the same noise so he wouldn't think I'm no pig. And I ended up moving that chair all over his office and I couldn't get it to make that noise again. Finally, it makes a little tiny noise, and Cronkite starts lighting matches in there. And he says, get out of here, you're making me sick. I felt real bad because the guy was eating his lunch. Well, I probably don't have to tell a lot of college graduates that I was real down after that. I was depressed as a dog. But I didn't give up. I said to myself, RR, yes, you can. I'm okay, you're okay. I'm my own best friend, my mother, myself. I have no fear of flying. I'm woman, hear me roar. Made it, and pretty big, I might add. So let me conclude and summarize and wrap this thing up real quick by saying it just goes to show you, it's always something. If it's not one thing, it's another. Either you can't get a job in journalism or Walter Cronkite thinks you cut the cheese in his office. It's just like this little graduation song that my father used to sing to me before I went to bed at night. He tucked me in all snug as a little bug in a rug and everything, put powder under my arm, make sure my toes are under the cover and I'm all cute and all in bed and everything like that. And he'd sing to me this graduation song, which was written by my grandmother, Nana Rosanna Dan. And I'm going to sing it to you for your graduation. Should all the acquaintance be forgot, I hope you'll hear my plea. Roseanne, my dear, you'll get a job if you listen to me. Just sit quite still and don't you move during your interview. Cause if you move, your boss will think the fart came out of you. But I'm my little Roseanne.
Those of you alive in that time will remember so well Rosanna Dana from Saturday Night Live, Gilda Radner. This is also a very talented, fairly new performer. She really made it big, I think, in the last few years. Wanda Sykes, her name, and this is an appearance on a national comedy show. She has something timely to say about what we're going through now.
The big story, the government bailout, they've been following this story.
Oh, Jay, this, you know, rich people got it good in this country, Jay.
Yeah.
We refuse to let rich people not be rich.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Broke people are going to bail out rich people.
That's right.
In essence, that's what's going on. I mean, and then they don't want any oversight. They want $700 billion right. and no oversight.
Yeah.
Why should we oversight? I want receipts, damn it. I want... because you were so good with the other money. Man, here's some more money. Oh, we're going to close eyes. What the heck? It is the biggest piece of garbage ever. I mean, really, I mean, it's you know what? It's rich welfare. It's welfare
right.
for the rich.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. I mean, you have, so they said the taxpayer, the average taxpayer is going to cost like $2,000.
No, $7,000. Every taxpayer.
$7,000 every taxpayer.
Right, right.
Now you got the guy out there busting his ass working two jobs, barely making $12,000 a year,
yeah.
and then he got to cough up something
yeah.
so the Wall Street guy can keep his swimming pool. That's
yeah.
a man. That's some garbage to me. The mortgage.
Yeah, vote for Wanda, yeah.
Now, here's the thing. So the government is going to buy up all these bad mortgages, right?
Right.
So now you have, in essence, you have rich people living in government houses. I want them treated like they're living in the projects.
Right, exactly, yeah.
There's no private swimming pools in the projects. Now, if you got a pool, open to the public. I
right.
want everybody, go ahead, take a dip. Take a
exactly.
dip. Just treat it like a project.
Exactly.
I want them every month, they got to go down to social services to pick up their paychecks.
Right.
Stand
right.
in line. Make them all stand in line, pick up their paychecks, and they can only cash them at the check cashing joint next to the liquor store.
Right.
Wanda Sykes, obviously on the Jay Leno show. We're going to end this hour and just letting you know that we didn't get to all of the comedy that you have requested, and then we have ready for you. We'll play more of it, of course, in spring. But because we lost him last year, and he is a funny man and so influential, we thought we would end this hour with George Carlin. Did you ever
dial someone on the phone and forget who you're calling? Do you ever look at yourself in store windows when you're passing stores? Hey, man, I look cool in the store window, man. Every now and then you hit a storefront that has a 45-degree angle, and you walk into yourself. Hey, man, I look cool walking into myself, man. Do you ever look at the crowds in old movies and wonder if they're dead yet? I do. They show a close-up of an old guy. What year is that movie? 1931? That guy's dead. He's dead. Come in here, Phil. It's a dead guy on TV. He wasn't dead then, but he's dead now. Look at that guy there. He's now dead, that guy. You ever tried to throw away an old wastebasket? Can't do it, man. People keep bringing it back to you.
Hey, your wastebasket was in the garbage.
You have to really stomp on it to throw it away, you know? Close the hole so it's not useful anymore. You ever hear this in your house?
Where's the good scissors?
I can't keep anything nice in this house. And I want my good tape measure back. Oh, the good tape measure, not the one with 38 inches missing in the middle, right? Here's something you hear. Mostly men say this around the house. Who stole my underwear? Somebody stole my underwear.
Which ones?
This week's underwear. You know, they came in here and they went right for the underwear. And that's all they took. It was a surgical strike. Bacon. Have you ever noticed that underneath all the neat horizontal strips, sweet, nice, neat, underneath is always one weird piece of bacon?
George Carlin, did you ever wonder? That concludes our comedy show for this winter. We didn't get to all that we wanted to, but we will adhere to our schedule of, what was it, a year and a half ago? We are going to do comedy spring, summer, winter, and fall. And so we'll have another comedy show coming up in the spring, which is next. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rob Schroeder for on-air production. If you have particularly interesting classic comedy, if you have comedy you'd like for us to play, we can't play all of it, obviously. We've had tons of phone calls this hour, but if you have something you would like for us to consider, please give us an email. It's fanning@wpr.org or dunkay@wpr.org, and we will be happy to listen to all of your ideas. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for answering phone calls, and thanks for listening, everybody. And I hope you liked it. I hope you laughed along. The Mark Twain quote actually is a good one. It's humor keeps the heart sweet. I like that. We have news coming up from National Public Radio and many hours of great conversation ahead. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.